the body of one of the attackers. It was picked up on the runway at the airport. The autopsy categorically excludes an extraterrestrial being. His molecular structure clearly establishes him as a member of the human race.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
Columbia Pictures presents Heavy Metal. A trip beyond the future to a universe you've never seen before. A universe of mystery. A universe of passionate fantasies. A universe of terrifying evil. A universe of magic. Heavy Metal.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 206, the animated classic from 1981,
Heavy Metal.
Yeah, obviously this would be the animated adaptation of Heavy Metal magazine, and this was a magazine that is still being published to this day. It started its publication in 1977. Now, that was the American version of Heavy Metal. Heavy Metal was actually based on a French magazine entitled Metal Hurlant. I may get that pronunciation wrong, but hey, you know.
Metal Hurlant.
Metal Hurlant. Yeah. Anyway, Heavy Metal. Interesting sort of magazine, because growing up, I mean, I was a comic reader. Anything that was four panel, anything that had illustration, word balloons, what have you, I wanted to get my hands on. Hmm. But Heavy Metal was something that was just that
you could not get your hands on it, literally.
It was, yeah. It was a top shelf magazine because it was not meant for children. Mm-hmm. Children. It was meant for adults. And it would be put up there on the top shelf with your Hustlers and your Playboys,
Swanks,
and your Penthouses. And that's because this was fantasy and sci-fi for adults. Most of the stories that were in Heavy Metal magazine were replete with sexual situations, nudity, excessive violence, and...
Well, you sound like your very own disclaimer right here. Yeah, no, that's what appealed to us as kids.
Right. And so... Anytime I could sort of sneak my hand up there and pull off a Heavy Metal and flip through it in the Barbie store, the bookstore, I was enthralled. I was enthralled by the world of Heavy Metal. And the interesting thing about Heavy Metal was that it was more than just pure and thrills, because you had renowned artists like Milo Manara, Richard Corbin, etc.
Mobius,
mm-hmm. what have you, writing for this anthology, there was no connective thread in Heavy Metal. It was just a bunch of stories about worlds of fantasy, worlds of sci-fi, worlds of imagination. And although this was intended for adults, it was purely meant for kids, because these were worlds that kids would just love to be in the sense that you had buxom women, you had muscle-bound heroes, you had swordplay, you had laser battles, you had everything going on.
You had foreplay, yeah.
And in 1981, Ivan Reitman,
Ghostbusters, Canadian,
yep.
You know, extraordinaire.
Yep. They decided to make this into an animated movie. And because this is a film that had Canadian roots with Ivan Reitman producing, there was a lot of Canadian talent providing voices for this film. A lot of SCTV cast members, John Candy, Joe Flaherty, Eugene Levy, Harold Ramis, and other Canadian actors.
John Vernon,
mm-hmm. Harvey Atkins, etc. And just like the magazine, this is a bit of an anthology.
Oh, it, yeah. No, you're right. It makes me laugh. Top shelf, I've only heard in the context of being something of very high quality.
Right.
But I've never heard it being like something you can't reach and where the porn was being kept.
No, I'm talking about.
I went to the store, very funny. Yeah.
And at the kids' level, you would see,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Mad Magazine, yeah. Spider-Man comics, highlights for kids, and then on the top shelf would be
buns and whatever else. And
there was that, so National Lampoon's was up there.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
They would have their odd bit of
maybe it's like Charlie Hebdo right now would be part of the same kind of, you know, French provocateur. And this movie is, I'm not sure how you came to it, but I was a big fan of Robert Crumb,
Fritz the Cat.
Even though I'm not a comic guy, but I heard.
Sorry. I think you're Ralph Bakshi is who you were. Oh, sorry, Robert Crumb. Yes, Fritz the Cat.
This was the kind of thing where you heard. It's like, oh, this is like, you know, cartoon tits and all this stuff. I don't know. Like someone I know said, like for some reason. Like, I knew about it, and there's no reason I should have at my, you know, at such a young age, but I knew it was something, it was some border I had to transgress. And so I thought, like, this is something I would and did seek out, animated nudity.
Mm.
And I found out, heavy metal was this place to go. And this is so weird, but I sought this out. Based on that, and that's how I came to it.
Well, yeah, I mean, Robert Crumb, of course, was one of the most influential comic artists ever in the underground movement. But then you had Ralph Bakshi, who came around, and he made a bunch of adult-oriented cartoons, mm-hmm. which I absolutely fell in love with as both a kid, a preteen, a teen, and an adult. Movies like Fritz the Cat, an adaptation of that, American Pop, Coonskin, Heavy Traffic,
Ooh.
Fire and Ice. He also did like a film adaptation of Lord of the Rings, which was more family friendly, Wizards, etc. And Heavy Metal, although not a Ralph Bakshi film, was in that spirit in the sense that this was a cartoon, and when you see the word cartoon, you think children, but this was not for kids. I mean, and again, when I say not for kids, it wasn't. Yes, okay, it wasn't for kids in the sense that kids should not be exposed to some of the situations in the movie, but it was totally for kids, because kids love this sort of stuff. And
well, a certain type of kid, for sure.
Yeah, and what I found so interesting about the movie was that some of the segments, particularly this segment revolving around the character Den, who was a child, who then...
Voiced by John Candy, yeah.
Right. Who then got whisked away to a planet where he found himself in a new body.
Mm-hmm.
He was a nerd, and all of a sudden he's got...
A metaphor of puberty, essentially.
Mm. He's got muscles, he's got abilities, he's got strength,
he's got power. Yeah.
And he's able to bed the most beautiful buxom ladies in the universe. I mean, this is pure wish fulfillment for a kid. And that's just one segment out of about 8 or 9 in this film. And every single one is just completely... something that a 13-year-old would just go gaga over. But not just a 13-year-old as well, but a 30-year-old, a 40-year-old, because I've seen this movie probably about 8-9 times, and every time I revisit it, I just find it to be extremely delightful. I love the music. I love the wraparound story, nuclear, etc.
Yeah.
And it's just something so... I mean, there's drug references in this movie.
Well, yeah, it's not exactly subtle.
Not at all.
But I was thinking, too, like, yeah, it's not exactly... It's a subset of a certain type of person who would like this. Not, I don't think males generally, by any means. It's a certain type of trench coat wearing... magic playing Dungeons and Dragons aficionado type. It's a fantasy that someone would conjure up who, the disparaging term is, you live in your parents' basement. It's sci-fi wish fulfillment. And when I watched this, I was like, I guess I haven't progressed beyond when I was 15 when I first saw it. It was like the boobs, the animated, like the nipples, the pneumatic bodies. It was something I found very, very erotic still. Tarek, I believe, is the female heroine at the end who brings this whole thing to a close.
She's so sexy.
She's so amazing. this is so pathetic.
I know.
We're professional people. I mean, come on. We're not outgrowing this at all, apparently. But the connective tissue that runs through the film is the sphere Lochnar and this glowing orb that various people covet and that we see, I guess, first in some weird, NASA space shuttle / Chevrolet that's plummeting toward Earth. So it's essentially who covets this ball and the magical properties that it holds and what this does to people. And that really is what ties the anthology together.
And in some sort of way, I mean, it's kind of, I guess you would say it's almost like a Twilight Zone type thing where everybody that does come across this ball, this orb, this glowing green orb, which is really supposed to be the sum of all evil, comes to a bad end, finds its way into the home of a young girl. And as villains, because this is a villain, this glowing orb is wont to do, they're very loquacious. They like to talk about how evil they are and what they've done in the past. And this villainous orb regales this young girl with tales of all the people that have come into contact with it and what befell them. And all these stories make up the film, where we have all these various animated vignettes, each one entertaining its own right.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, some more than others.
Varying degrees of success, yeah.
Talking about the film is interesting because I don't really want to go through each and every vignette and describe what happens, but it starts off really, really cool. We have with the story of Harry Canyon, the cab driver. I really, really dug that one.
Yeah, it stuck with me years hence, and this is stupid too. The Super Bowl is coming up, and Harry Canyon looks like the coach of one of the teams taking part, but it's an aside. But he's just this grizzled taxi driver, urban milieu kind of guy who's just dealing with his shit, and this is a post-apocalyptic kind of wasteland. It's kind of a Detroit.
Well, in many ways,
it's like a crime-ridden whatever.
Yeah, I don't know why. It reminds me of Total Recall. I got a very Total Recall in this particular segment, the Harry Canyon segment. But yeah.
He's just trying to make ends meet. It's hard to, the amount of movies this thing influenced. Like, I was thinking Fifth Element. With another, flying car kind of thing. But this guy who's, facing the dangers of a night, shepherding people around this cityscape.
Well,
it's like an Uber driver. It's New York. And he's got a, he picks up this passenger who's running for her life. He takes pity on her and he takes her.
Well, what's interesting, you're mentioning this, post-apocalyptic New York and everything has gone to shit. And in the 80s, the whole cliche was that, it was a very
death wish and all that stuff.
So your cab driver may be packing a pistol or something. Well, no, this guy's not packing a pistol. He's packing a lethal ray that's going to vaporize you into basically dust and bones.
Yeah, exactly.
In the backseat of your affair. So, yeah. And as you're saying, he picks up a woman fleeing for her life.
Yeah, and they carry on this relationship. It was sort of a strange relationship because she's quite young and he's rather old and haggard. But he's her protectorate, and they carry on this kind of affair. But it's just a really neat way to just drop you into this world. I mean, there are very few films that create such an otherworldly place. I was thinking Blade Runner when I watched this too.
Oh,
this is, they carry you into this completely different world. And there's some naysayers and pedants and these people online saying, this is kind of, some of the animation was kind of amateurish and we've come a long way since then. It's like, fuck you.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Since then.
This is still phenomenal. State of the art for its time and not, necessarily
Pixar would not touch heavy metal.
Yeah, exactly. And, not to the same extent in every vignette, but let's say 3 or 4 out of the 10 were mind-blowing visual creations that have sat with me for decades.
And it's interesting you mentioned Blade Runner, too, because the Harry Canyon segment is very much sci-fi film noir. That's, you have your femme fatale, etc., and that's what Blade Runner was as well. So, and that's just one of eight or nine segments that are just absolutely phenomenal. We are then led, as I said before, into the den segment. And it's hard for me to say what my favorite segment is, but that, like I said before, when I first saw this film as a 13-year-old kid, fuck, man, what kid does not dream
of being empowered like that?
Of being whisked away from this workaday life, you know, where
yeah,
just pathetic nobodies.
Pathetic masturbatory existence.
Well,
yeah.
Oh my God. Why do you have to mention the word masturbatory? Because...
Oh, I was speaking, yeah, maybe I was projecting.
No,
no,
because,
that was me at 13, yeah.
Oh my God, am I going to actually...
No,
I feel like I'm on the stand now, and I feel like I'm about to incriminate myself.
Hmm.
But...
Like Hanover Fist in this very movie.
That is true.
Yeah.
But you mentioned the character of Tarek, and I said, oh, so sexy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very ashamed to admit that when I was 13 or 14
God.
Years old, yes,
oh
I did
God.
Offer myself to this movie.
Oh my God. I don't even know what to say.
I was 13 fucking years old, okay?
It's fine.
You
it's
get
fine.
What you
no.
take what you can get.
Yeah, no, I agree. And
I didn't pleasure myself revisiting it for this podcast, okay?
Oh, and it's funny when you see, like, Empire and, like, AV Club, these reviews of people watching this movie, like, 30 and a half years hence, where they're talking about the misogyny.
Oh,
this is
so
pure, this is pure projection. They're like, people, like, you, on our way over to our alternate downtown Toronto headquarters,
I'm so embarrassed.
You have... A Wonder Woman, the decal, like what is that hanging
it's
off
it's
your
a
bag?
Keychain.
It's a
keychain.
Keychain. Yeah. Yeah, and it's like we love empowered, sexy women, of which Tarek is one. And as much as this is a bunch of gratuitous wish fulfillment and nudity, and every female in the cast is there solely to expose her body, really,
it was made for the male
it's
gaze.
It's made for the male gaze, but only the prepubescent male gaze. This is by no means some sort of indictment of our gender as a whole. Like, this is made for the basement dwellers, the magic players, the comic book readers. This is 16-year-old projectionist.
But I feel like when you say that, you're almost saying it like as if it's like in a pejorative sense. The basement.
No, not at all. This is a niche
wrong.
Thing. There's
yeah.
this is a niche. This is fantasy. This is
kids need this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
They need this wish fulfillment. They need this. These fantasy worlds where everything is just so much more fantastical and...
Yeah, than your humdrum existence, because even in the den segment, John Candy voices this character. I think he probably is a debit to his film Voice Too Many, but anyway,
no,
he
you
says...
you never get enough John Candy's voice.
Possibly. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I miss him to this day, but I was thinking, like...
I still remember, like, where I was precisely the moment I found out when John Candy died. And what I was doing, it was, I miss the man terribly. He was wonderful.
Well, we could go on a diversion about John Candy. I was thinking, like, in the typical film of this type, you would think someone who's whisked away to another world would miss, let's say, their
parents
and their siblings and their pets. This guy does not want to come back to Earth. He likes being dead because I think, as he says at one point, like, here I'm a somebody back on Earth. I'm a nobody. Like, he's a scrawny, nebbish guy who proverbially gets sand kicked in his face. And then here he becomes a hero. And the monomyth
yeah,
stuff
it's like,
is
it's
so
like the
pervasive.
It's like the Charles Atlas
yeah.
you would have in the back of comic books.
Oh, yeah.
Pure wish fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And what 13-year-old kid would not want to all of a sudden wake up in the body of this...
racially ambiguous, muscled... charming Lothario guy who beds, as he says in this film too, two women in one day. Like, as he does get with, I think, a queen in one segment and then with another woman. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
As someone who didn't get laid until they were 18, I'm not embarrassed to say, this was something I could really get behind. I was useless as a kid. You feel disempowered. You feel weak because you are, mentally and physically.
And see, therein lies the appeal of fantasy, superheroes, comic books, etc. You seem to not want to embrace the fact that as a child, you read comic books. I don't believe you didn't read comic books.
I just missed the boat.
You said, oh, I read Dostoevsky as a kid.
Bullshit! Yeah, no, I missed the boat
yeah?
on the stuff that you were into, because I was consistently told I was such this wonderful reader, I should be reading this stuff that was above my level, and then by the time I got into comic books, it was too late to have the appeal that it would have when you had it. Mm. So I didn't have that opportunity.
And it's all about,
it's very weird.
It's all about that wish fulfillment. It's mm-hmm. all about the escapism of picturing yourself as these heroes, fighting these larger-than-life battles, having these powers at your disposal.
Of course. And, yeah. and for all the people who say how sexist it is, just put yourself in the position of a young boy.
A young, sexually frustrated.
Sexually boy. Frustrated. And the reason why we were sexually frustrated is because, A, we were small, and B, we were weak. So, like, it wasn't until, like, 9th and 10th grade where we managed to even out the height discrepancy that we had with our female classmates.
But we still weren't getting laid.
Even then, it wasn't enough to even the playing field or the height field. Like, it was pathetic.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, like, when you developed, like, secondary or whatever, sexual characteristics, and you hit puberty and you developed, like, underarm hair. I was, like, fucking 15 or whatever it was. I was, like, 5'4", 5'3". And you had, like, bona fide real women as classmates in 8th and 9th grade who were mature, smart, sophisticated, and had their shit together. And we were useless. We were just jerking off. We were, like, immature. We were pathetic. And then when the things finally evened out and we hit 17, 18, it was a relief because they were legitimate young women. We were not young men by any stretch. You may have had a bar mitzvah, but you were not a man. And
no,
like, it was pathetic.
Around,
oh,
yeah.
It was like, my God, we were weak. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and to morph into someone like with this beast-like physique who could take on any challenge. It's a monomyth writ large, or Joseph mm-hmm. Campbell. This is someone who could actually accomplish things and not be this wimp with some small dick and whatever.
So when you...
At the time,
yeah.
you grew into it later.
Speak for yourself. Anyway, yeah. I'm totally incriminating myself too. It's so funny because when I was revisiting this film for the podcast, and I thought to myself, am I going to incriminate myself? Because even as a 13-year-old, I felt guilty having those certain urges to this animated character. I mean, that's a question that people have asked themselves. Can we find animation sexy? I remember Jessica Rabbit. That was like...
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
yeah.
I was going
to
say. Yeah.
And people to this day, oh, my God. I mean, I find Scarlet from G.I. Joe or The Baroness. I mean, she's my first sexual fantasy. Or Chitara from Thundercats. Or even Lois from Family Guy, you know? Mm. But the reality is, you know, whatever. They're animated. They're real. It's... When I watched this movie, I went along with the ride in every single way, and that Tara character was just so sexy, so strong, so empowered, and man, oh man. I mean, that was just the cherry on the sundae.
Oh, yeah. I guess in their defense, there are people, maybe detractors from this film, when you want to say, like, how empowered she was.
Fuck
detractors,
man.
Well, no, but still, when she, like, approaches the goddess, I guess she's in the temple, and there's a monument, and there's a stone statue. She still doffs her clothes in front of them. So as empowered as she is, and she's a warrior queen, and kicks incredible ass in the bar scene where she a bunch of assailants come to her and say, "Hey, baby, you know what are you doing in a place like this?" She fucking decapitates them, and it's so great. But still, she doffs her clothes in a moment's notice, and so it's still.
Well, no, I mean,
you're appealing to a certain kind of niche
audience.
There's
no doubt about it. Heavy Metal the magazine, Heavy Metal the movie. This was fantasy wish fulfillment for boys. Nobody writing Heavy Metal at the time said, how can we appeal to a female audience? And even
yeah.
though you had buff men wearing nothing but like a loincloth or what have you, it's like Conan the Barbarian, you know,
mm-hmm.
scantily clad. But it was still boys that love those adventures because Conan would crush his enemies hear their lamentations and then go to bed with, like, you know, Sandal Bergman or what have
you.
Yeah,
exactly.
And
oh, yeah.
all the fantasy, I mean, it really is for boys. But at the same time, there were some real, real kick-ass strong females in this movie.
Yeah, even
and
if they're just throwing them a bone, they acquitted themselves so well. Like,
but the end, and the ultimate hero of the movie, without spoiling anything, is a female.
Mm-hmm.
Because the one who is going to save the world from the power of this evil glowing orb, it's not Tarek. It's going to be somebody else, somebody female. So ultimately, what this film does is it teaches young men to respect the female because they are going to be the savior of the species.
Yeah, indeed. Were there any particular segments that stood out to you? Because there was Harry Canyon for sure. Like that laser, or what was it? I don't even know how you describe it.
A vaporizer,
an obliterator.
Yeah.
And he would deploy it through some sort of, I think, a foot pedal, and it was meant to shoot out into the back seat of his cab. And I thought, like, that's something that stuck with me for years. There was a segment that was a kind of a throwaway, but some people seemed to like it. There was a World War II bomber that was flying through space,
mm-hmm.
and the two pilots, realized that there's some evil presence in the back that takes out one of the gunners. And this is like a Lancaster bomber, which is kind of neat because it had little turrets. I used to be obsessed with Lancaster bombers as a kid, and this was a Lancaster bomber because they had these little turrets where you could sit inside and shoot a machine gun, and there's a little bubble that turned and you would spin. So essentially what it was like a video game where you'd, shoot at different things, like a first-person shooter, but in the context of 1941 or whatever, 1939. So there's this segment where the pilots get, spoiler alert, killed by these, zombie mutant like creatures in the back of this aircraft. And I thought that really stuck with me too, not to the same extent as the Harry Canyon, but there's also other segments that touch on certain themes that are very interesting. What was your favorite one?
Well, I've already said Harry Canyon, Den. I did like the segment with the two space stoners. I thought that was pretty hilarious.
Well, yeah, when you want to talk about not exactly oblique references to drugs, there's very overt references to cocaine. And this would have been right in the Reagan cocaine boom.
Well, there were
there's like anteaters, like sniffing, like doing lines right off the.
Well, that was, to me, that was very much an homage to Cheech and Chong and just their vernacular and their mm-hmm. parlance, the way they were speaking and stuff. And yeah, I thought that was a lot of fun. With anthologies, you always have your stellar segments and your weaker segments. And in this film, some of them are a little stronger than others, but there's not one moment where I thought to myself, okay, this just fast forward through this one. They all have something to offer. They're all fun, unique, and exciting. And
yeah, really memorable in their own right. Mm-hmm. Should we get to the point of what we learned?
Yeah, no, I mean, this... So I liked each segment equally, with some a little more memorable than others. You, what was...
Oh, well, I would say I didn't like segments as equally as others. There's this protracted scene where this kind of like an Osiris, Isis kind of trip to the underworld with this kind of ziggurat temples and this whole thing kind of thing. It wasn't as appealing. There was a scene where there's this accused who was accused of, I think, this kind of... unseemly of like 20, 30 rapes. He's like a captain in the Air Force. So I don't know what he is.
Oh, but I love that. Hand over fist,
and then he pays off a witness to speak on his behalf. I thought that was cool because uh-huh. he transforms into this like Ralph Steadman, the famous illustrator for Hunter S. Thompson. He grows out of the witness booth. He's this kind of skinny kind of convict, and then he just balloons into this Hercules kind of figure, and that was really neat. The segment wasn't so riveting, but the animation was cool.
Well, that's what
was very rough.
I love the fact that the man on trial, Captain Lincoln Pfister.
Oh man,
he was drawn
Bruce
with
Campbell,
big square jaw, very Dudley Do-Right. You know?
Oh, okay.
So you look at him and think, well, this
like
man
Superman.
Is exactly. Mm. He's going to be this virtuous hero. And he turns out to be this complete scoundrel.
Yeah.
Whereas Hanover Fist was this complete nerd and so
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
so
he's just getting paid to say something because he's like had a rough time in life and he's just being paid off to commit perjury essentially in this trial. But yeah, like each vignette was is interesting in its own right, and really unique and really weird.
And although they were all somewhat different, they all kind of coalesce into one overarching story with this whole Lochner thing and what
mm-hmm.
ended up happening near the end. that made it a really cool, cohesive whole.
Yeah.
Now, Heavy Metal is the epitome of a cult movie in the sense, yeah, it came out in 81. I'm sure that it did amazingly well at midnight screenings. Probably all male audiences sitting there. But for many, many years after that, it was held up in terms of accessibility because of the rights of the music. I mean, on the soundtrack, I mean, you got a movie called Heavy Metal, you got to have
your metal.
You got to have your metal. And I mean,
Sabbath. Yeah. Nazareth.
Not only that, it was the Dio version of Sabbath.
How much Yeah.
Sammy Hagar, you got Blue Oyster Cult. Mm-hmm. And then you also had Cheap Trick, you had Don Felder from the Eagles, you had Journey.
Yeah.
Open Arms is premiered in this fucking movie, man. Mm-hmm. And I come to you with open arms.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Grand Funk Railroad, as Homer Simpson would say. You can never not have Grand Funk. Just an incredible soundtrack. Sammy Hagar, of course, you know, pre-Van Halen.
Yeah, that was I would say that was a standout. You know, that was the Can't Drive 55 pre-Van Halen Hagar.
So not Hagar the Horrible.
Hagar the Great.
When you have the music working in congruency with these wonderful animated vignettes and these wonderful images that take you away to a different place where you're allowed to let your imagination run free, there's just something so much. I mean, movies are escapism at the best of times. And this is escapism. This is fun.
It's heroism.
This is heroism. This is, you know, your monomyth, the hero, mm-hmm. hero versus the villain. You got everything in this movie. And it's almost like a rite of passage. Right? You're going to watch Heavy Metal at some
point. Yeah, that's what people will not get. And maybe they shouldn't get it. Because if you're a 17-year-old woman, you will not. Like, this is...
And you got to remember, this was way before the internet.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what I'm saying, man. Like, when I incriminated myself and said, yeah, okay, I pleasure myself to fucking Heavy Metal, that's because we took what we can get, dude. I couldn't just click a button and say, okay, this is what...
Oh,
I, you know?
My God. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, this...
What, are you having an orgasm right now?
No. a friend of mine, Ari, growing up, he sourced some Hustlers. And because we were young, we had to pick a time where we could go see this because, you know, like he had them on him and we wanted to like go see stuff.
Full of cum.
Yeah, exactly. And we couldn't just go to like his place and hang out because his parents were there and whatever. And so we decided to meet on a Saturday morning in the park.
You did not participate in a circle jerk.
No, but I was in 9:30 in the morning because he got this. Dude, you got to see this. This is a Hustler. He got this Hustler. So we went to the park and we met in the morning and we went and sat on this park bench and we looked through this Hustler and we saw the bush, we saw the titties, we saw everything. And unfortunately for me, my dad noticed that we were. I was getting up a little too early on a Saturday than I normally would have. And why I would go to the park and sit there in the middle of, like, he could see us from his vantage point from the, you know, from our backyard. And when I got back, Ari, you bastard, he gave me one of his Hustlers that he found. You know, I had it under my coat. And my dad asked me what I was doing on a Saturday morning in the park. At 9 in the morning.
Saturday
in the park. It must have been the 4th of July in Chicago.
Chris was jerking off the Hustler.
He found it. He asked me what it had on me. He confiscated it. He ripped it to shreds. And he gave me he tore me down. And my dad is from Italy. He's like, you know, he's like a traditionalist. He was like, I will never forget that. Like, so... Our younger listeners, like, you don't know how easy it was for a millennial to just find porn. We had to source it. We had to find the guy on the block who had the porno. And then we would find a time when we could actually watch it. So the uncle who had the VHS tapes of the porno. Again, good night. Find a time for sleepover, not to rouse your parents to go watch it. Like, you have no idea how tough it was
and how easy
and how easy it is now. And so that's where a movie like Heavy Metal
and
is like,
and because it was so much harder, it made it so much better.
I agree as well.
You jerk off to anthropomorphic cats that basically have breasts, and did you? I incriminate myself.
Possibly. Yeah. Yeah, but that's exactly it. Like, this is the environment we had to deal with.
Well, all I gotta say is that thank you to Ivan Reitman, thank you to Ralph Bakshi, thank you to all of these transgressive, Robert Crumb, etc., these artists that took what was essentially a medium for kids, a comic book, and elevated it into something a little more...
Yeah, well, literally, putting it on the top shelf.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
A little more adult, a little bit more transgressive, and ultimately it would fall into the hands of kids, but see, there's nothing wrong with that, because this is all part of our development. This is all part of what it takes in terms of learning that the female species is something to be revered,
mm-hmm.
and something to be cherished, and not just for their assets, but for so much more than that, because to this day, I am, as you know, a Wonder Woman fanatic. I mm-hmm. love the character, but it's not what she looks like, per se. It's what she represents. She's a strong woman. She stands for everything that humankind needs in order to become elevated as a species.
Agreed.
Compassion, strength, beauty, love, justice, etc. And a lot of this was because I grew up with female role models, because
dad was a wayward, degenerate.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up admiring the strong female. And, you know, another example of the strong female is the Russ Meyer films. Yet again, you've got these busty pneumatic women running around showing off their goods, but at the same time, these women, they hold all the power, they kick all the ass. And the men are the ones that are subjugated to the power of the female, because we have no control over our
base urges,
whereas females...
Well, I think people way smarter than ourselves would have pointed to the civilizing aspect of the women in the lives of men. I mean, we mature way later. Women are forced, because of biology, because they can't have kids beyond a certain age, to achieve by a certain level. They have to find a mate by a certain level. They have timelines that it constricts them in certain ways. Men get like this pathetic Peter Pan syndrome, where you have like a guy who's like 52 and hasn't dated seriously, and buys a Harley Davidson. It's like, it's kind of sad. Like, women have their shit together way much more than men. Men have a decade later when they finally do it. Like, we admire women. Women civilize men. Men are left to their own devices. We're way more unclean. Like, without a woman's influence, like, the surroundings here, this is my place as a single man. If I didn't have that influence, this place would be a total disaster.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to, they have their shit together way earlier. We owe them such a debt of gratitude beyond.
And it's interesting, because in this post-Weinstein era, I almost feel like it's problematic, to use that word again, to describe a woman in terms of their physical attributes and how wonderfully fantastic they are. But the reality is that, fuck, man, if we didn't have women in this civilization,
we'd torn each other shreds.
Yeah. And within an instant. And this is going way past heavy metal as a film, but I just want to say, like, we live in a patriarchal society. What has that got us? Look where the world is today. I believe we need a matriarchal society. Mm. That's another reason why I relate to Wonder Woman, because of the island, the mascara.
Snubbed at the Oscars, but anyway.
Yeah. You know, we need more Theresa Mays and less fucking Donald Trump.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, women, it's their time to rule the world, as far as I'm concerned. Men, we've had our chance.
We've had our chance to screw up. Maybe they'll screw up. Maybe they'll improve it. Who knows?
Yeah. Theresa Mays, Angela Merkel's, whatever. Yeah. Angela Merkel.
Angela. The angle.
Let's just enough.
Angela Merkel.
And you know what? If you're listening to this and you think that I'm some sort of fucking cuck or something, whatever word you want to use,
hey, we made no bones about our, you know, how women appeal to us on a physical level. Like, we're never going to be. Like, we're still men at heart.
It's not just physical. It's intellectual.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. You know,
women are the catalyst of everything that is wrong about society.
Yeah, we wouldn't have gotten where we have without that. We would be hopeless without them. And a star rating.
So we started off discussing heavy metal as a movie. Now we're sort of extolling the fairy sex.
Yeah, exactly. But who would have thought this movie of all things would have been the vehicle for us to do that? Doesn't matter.
Not a perfect film. As you said before, some segments may not be as great as others, but I mean, holy shit. I mean, this is a film I've seen so many times and it keeps holding up for me and I love it. And mm-hmm. I'm going to give it 3.5 stars.
Okay. Yeah. I think likewise. Harry Canyon, whoa, amazing. Just such an amazingly touching relationship he has. Well, though, okay, it goes south.
He vaporized her at the end.
Yeah, well, initially, he has his instincts are pure. Things go wrong. But again, this movie is something to behold, and some of the segments were more compelling than others. It's an anthology. What are you going to do? Doesn't matter. It started strong. It ended strong. And that's really... to bookend a movie like this, that's really what's most important. Anyway, check out www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.